Welcome to a special episode of Conversations with Community Managers. Today we'll listen in as Rachel Hoppe, principal and co-founder of the Community Roundtable, chats with Marjorie Anderson, manager of digital communities at the Project Management Institute, about the State of Community Management Report 2019. Specifically, they'll discuss key finding number 3, community leadership is unevenly distributed. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy this special episode.
Marjorie, it's so nice to have you here. Welcome to the podcast. And I first want to thank you because you were really instrumental as part of the working group this year in helping us think through some of the really big issues around community. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
And today, I really want to dig into the career piece with you because it's something that you've led some advocacy around and talk a lot about in different areas. And I wanted to kick off that conversation with this kind of stunning number that hasn't moved very much in our research, which is 50% of community professionals are like burnt out. And not occasionally, like they're regularly burnt out. What is that all about to you? And what do you think is driving it?
Yeah, so that burnout piece, I got to tell you, it's every time that I see that number, it's staggering to me. But I think that there are a couple of things happening there. I think that the first thing is that there's not a large understanding around what community really is and what it's meant to do in a lot of organizations. So senior leadership doesn't understand that it takes more than one person to do that job. So they figure, oh, we'll just stand it up and kind of like a Facebook or a LinkedIn group, we'll just have somebody keep an eye on it. And that's not at all how community works. So you've got organizations who are saying, yeah, we think this is valuable and cool. And yeah, let's go ahead and do this. And you, one person over there that only has 24 hours in a day, why don't you go ahead and run that? And so while the excitement is there that people are starting to see that there is some value in community, they're not really understanding what it actually takes to run a community and to grow a community so that it is providing some lasting value. So I think that's one piece of it. The other piece of that, I think, is that as organizations do start to understand community and the value that it provides, everyone's clamoring for a piece of it. So you've got people who want you to sit on project teams to help kind of inject that community view, or you've got people who want to skill up and learn a little bit more in terms of what does it take to have a community mindset, but there aren't any additional resources to help you do those things. So you're pretty much a consultant for your organization when it comes to community, but you are maybe one or two people and you don't have the bandwidth to not only make sure that the organization has what they need to be able to connect better and to instill those community-driven skills, and then also run your online community. So I think that, you know, those are two of the things that are really kind of driving that and really making community professionals feel like, you know what, I need 5 vacations in a row.
I have definitely felt that way this year, interestingly enough. And it's funny, related to that second piece, I've often teased the community managers on our team, or tease is the wrong word, but like I often say community management is really 1,001 ways to say no without saying no.
Uh-huh.
Like, how do you put limits on things? So that you're not constantly overwhelmed by requests. And so like, that leads me to, how do you think we could like advocate for ourselves to help address this? How do we start to set either like help people understand or set limits on what we're getting asked to do?
So I think the big thing that if community professionals aren't already doing it is really explaining what community is not. One of the things that I always have conversations with about with people within my organization is to say, you know, yes, community has content, but that is community is not content. It is not a place for things to go when you don't have anywhere else to put it. if you say, you know, I want to be able to reach a broader audience, but what does that mean? What are you trying to accomplish? So I think that getting people to understand what community is not is going to be extremely helpful. And then when someone does come to you to say, I think this is something that community can help me with, then have a deeper conversation with them about what they're trying to achieve, who they're trying to reach, and why they think community is the place for it. Mm-hmm. And if there's not a good conversation that comes out of that, then be okay with saying, you know, community is not the place for what you're looking for. And I think that community professionals are afraid to say that because then that leads people to believe, the perception is that it leads people to believe that there's no value in community if I can't just throw my thing here.
Yeah.
No, here's where the value lies. It's not in you being able to throw whatever you need to throw in there because you don't have anywhere else to put it. The value lies in A, B, C, D, whatever that value is for your organization. Yeah. So, being able to have those conversations and not being afraid to tell somebody this is not the place for it, that's how you're going to be able to show value. Because then it's not a dumping ground. It's a strategic tool to further engagement within your organization, help create some better connections, and then help kind of elongate that, extend the value of not only the community, but of the business to the members that you serve.
Yeah, it's interesting. Implicit in that is that you really have to get crystal clear about what community is.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're confused. And you can't say no if you don't know what yes is.
Exactly.
Which leads me into the next thing that I want to explore. And it's something I've been talking a lot about, which is the definition of community leadership, or any leadership for that matter. And I think starting with the ability to say yes and no may be the most basic definition of leadership. But I'd love to hear your perspective on how do you as a community professional think about leadership?
So I think about, there's a couple of ways that I think about leadership. So it's not only being able to help the people that are part of your team understand, okay, here's what we're here to do. But I think it's also being able to allow your people to, from a management perspective, to allow those that manage the community with you to manage the community while you are advocating for the community on your program's behalf. So let them go about the work of engaging while you're kind of out there fighting the battles, right? So if someone's like, oh, community needs to be a marketing tool. No, that's your job to go out and say, no, it's not a marketing tool. Here's why. Mm-hmm. So I think that you're kind of, for lack of a better word, you're kind of a shield in that respect. For your team and for your community.
So this brings up an interesting point too, which is one that I've been like mulling over lately, which is leadership often gets conflated with structural authority.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this actually causes issues for community managers who often have a lot of power through influence and therefore leadership, but they do not have the structural authority to make decisions. And I think community professionals in general give away a lot of their power because they don't articulate that power that comes from influence.
Right.
And so I was having a kind of interesting, fascinating conversation about like asking people, do you consider yourself a leader? And part of that, like a lot of people said, no, well, that's not for me to decide, which I have a lot of, like that used to be my perspective. But then on the other side, I thought, you know what? That's giving away our power to not say we have a leadership role. And if we don't take that power that comes from influence, we don't realize what our operating margins are within the organization. And we assume we cannot push things because a formal authority figure is not supportive of it.
Right. And then what that then, to your point, leads to is that you don't think you can move the needle in any way, shape, or form because you don't have a direct formal title of manager or leader or, you know, when that's, and it stops you from talking to people and having conversations and going out and advocating for your community or helping people build skills around community. It completely stops you in your tracks because you think, I'm not qualified to do that, when in fact you're the person who is most qualified to do that. And you don't need an office or a formal title to be able to do that. Just start talking to people. And by way of you going out and taking those steps, you're a leader. And you don't need to have people reporting to you. You know, one of the things that my boss before, she moved on to another role, and before I stepped up into her role, you know, she enabled that within us. She's like, go out and have conversations and talk to people about the online community and get them to understand that, understand what it is and what it isn't and how we can help. And I think you also have to have the desire to want to do that too, for the sake of your community and for the sake of your program. Otherwise, no one else is going to do it for you.
Yeah. And like, isn't that the way you got into your current role, is just by taking the tacit power you had to feel empowered to go promote the community and do some of that leadership work?
Yeah, it was. When I first entered community management, we were changing programs. We weren't changing programs. The structure of our program was changing. So we were going from a community of practice model to one integrated online community. And there was a bunch of stuff going on along with it. And as we were going through this, about 6 months into us transitioning into the new model, I was having a conversation with my manager at the time. And I said, so how are people going to know what community is? And she goes, well, that's, you know, our job to let them know. And I'm like, well, how are we going to do that? Could we incorporate that to the business acumen program that we have here within our organization? Can we do a lunch and learn? Is there something that we can do to talk to people? So I developed a lunch and learn program that kicked off shortly after we launched our new community program. And I tweaked it over the course of a couple of years. And you know, for some people it was clicking and for some people it wasn't. So I sat down and I had a conversation with my manager again. And I said, I think some people are getting it and some people aren't, but I think there's more that we can be doing. How can you help me understand how this program fits into the overall organizational strategy so that we can have more productive conversations? And so I began to start just having conversations. I was scheduling meetings with directors. I was scheduling meetings with colleagues. I was scheduling meetings with other with managers, and just sitting down and asking, what's your perception of community? What are the things that you're dealing with right now that we could possibly help with? And just really trying to understand the business at large so that I could then understand how we fit into it all, and then how I can then communicate that back out to people so that they get it. And it's still a work in progress because, you know, staff rotates in and out, and everyone, you know, because we're so content heavy right now, it's like, oh, that's where the content goes, but still continuing to have those conversations and wanting to really make sure that people understand what our community is meant to do and where it fits in the strategy and how we can help move along the association and meet member needs is a passion of mine, because I don't think that I think that when you have a community program and people don't understand it, that just sets you up for, you know, for failure and for people to not understand what your purpose is. I just had a VP flat out tell me, you know, we were kind of going through a little bit of an organizational restructure, and, you know, he flat out told me, I was just going to put you guys in content, but until you had that conversation with me about community, it helped me understand where you really needed to go. So if you're not having those conversations, that type of stuff can happen. And you have to be confident enough and willing to stand up and speak up for your online community program. Otherwise, you're going to continue to have those frustrations and the burnout's going to be even worse.
What made you do it? Like, what made you do it in a way that, like, other people didn't, do you think? Like,
I think it was just my desire to understand my job and to understand what value the program that I was a part of was delivering. Because for a very long time, I had been in customer care, been customer service for a long, long time before I entered the community management space. So I understood what the purpose of customer service was and back office operations. But this was a little more nebulous to me. I didn't understand. I had never heard of community management. And so I wondered, well, what was, you know, this was the third time that our community program had changed. And I'm like, well, what's the value? Where does it fit into the overall strategy for the organization? Why does PMI keep investing in it? What's my job and my role in making sure that it's continuing to be successful? And that really just kind of catapulted me down a rabbit hole of other stuff. So
I'm hearing a couple of things in there, which is, one, you're curious. Two, you're courageous and or not afraid to fail, in that, like, there's a certain extent that you'll just go out and talk to anyone, and there's more upside than downside to that in your head. And three, and this gets to kind of the last part I wanted to explore, is a real focus on value. And I think this is another piece of leadership, which is really interesting to me, is I feel like we don't come into ourselves until we start, we stop hiding from being held accountable.
Yeah.
And we say, okay, I'm willing to explore how the money comes in and how the money goes out.
Yep.
And I'm not going to hide from that and just be protected from that. I'm going to actually lean into that so that I can really understand and make sure that, you know, I am in control as much as I can be of my value.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. You know, when you've got something that people don't really understand, but they know that there's something there, it can easily be abused. And I think that you have to protect it as well as flaunt it, right? So here's the value. This is what this program is going to do for the organization. I think you have to be able to also talk in those terms, right? Because I think that we've talked about this a little bit in the working group, is I think that we are so close to community that we speak community to people who don't understand that language. Mm-hmm. And so it just confuses them, or they're like, you know, yeah, I kind of get what you're saying, but I still don't understand necessarily what you're saying. So I think that if you appeal to the business side of that, because that's how the rest of the business is going to talk to you. They're going to talk to you in, you know, terms like ROI, or, you know, business value, or value tree, or, you know, value proposition, or value delivery landscape, whatever it is that they're using. So you have to be able to have that conversation with them the same way. Otherwise, that community speak is just going to go over their heads, and they're going to feel like it's squishy, and they're going to be like, well, can't we do that some other way? And if you're not really clear in the way that you communicate that, it gets lost as well.
It's really interesting, because I was speaking with a woman, Angela Blanchard, who runs this huge community foundation in Houston, or did for many years. And she really succinctly combined this community language with business language. And she was talking about budgeting. And she was like, budgets are the biggest advocacy tool we have. And, like, I just loved that, because it combined the two things in a way that said, no, business isn't like outside of this thing, and advocacy isn't outside of this thing. They're two sides of the same coin. Like, if you don't understand how budgeting impacts advocacy and how advocacy impacts budgets, you're missing like half of your tool set.
Yep.
Right. Absolutely. You're not translating what you really want or what the community really wants to see happen into a tangible that can be absorbed by the business.
Exactly. And I think one of the valuable things that has really been helpful for our community program is when we do our annual budget, there's a comments field. So it really helps us tell you, this is what we're spending this money on, because we're a cost center. You know, we don't directly bring in revenue, but when we can show what we're actually spending the money on in order to create additional value and where it reaches, that's huge. And there's not been one year. Well, there was one year where, you know, we had to scale back a little bit on our budget, but it wasn't a lot. And it wasn't because our community wasn't providing value. There were some other things going on, but it really, if you can show where that money you're spending is creating opportunities, where it's helping with member retention, where it's, you know, whatever it's doing to extend the value of the online community within the organization, that's major. And I've not once, knock on wood, had my budget come into question. I actually had my VP come down because I told him we were making some updates to our programming and some things that we wanted to do to really change the experience. And here's how it was going to, you know, help with retention and, you know, lead generation, those types of things. And, you know, he came into my office and he goes, you know, I really, you know, are these things that you're going to be able to do within X amount of time? Because I'd really like to secure some additional marketing budget for these initiatives so that you can announce these things to the rest of the membership. And when you're able to really articulate those types of things to your point, that's where you're going to see additional support for you. Once you understand it, you can get somebody else to really understand it. I mean, the advocacy that you've created for your program is going to create such a lasting impression, and people are going to get it. It's going to click. And people are going to be willing to step out for you to make sure that you have what you need in order to run your program successfully.
So this brings up an interesting point, because you see it, I see it, but 17% of community programs do not have a resource-approved roadmap, which is like just stunning to me. Mm-hmm. But do you have like two or three pieces of tactical advice of like, okay, if you're one of those programs, maybe you're on your own, you don't really have a budget, certainly not an approved budget, what are some like tactical steps community professionals can do right away to get further down that path?
I think one of the major things that you have to do is if you're not creating a strategy, or at the very least an operational plan for your community, and sharing it and connecting it with larger strategy or operational plans, then you're missing an opportunity there. Because then again, I think, that goes, of course, back to value. Well, what is it that your community is connecting into that's going to extend what we already say is a benefit to either being a part of an organization or what have you. So create a solid operational plan and create a solid strategy. And in that, what are the budget implications? So in order to do this, so that it can do that, we need this. So, and make sure that you're outlining that, and make sure that someone who is above you sees that, so that they understand what you're doing. We tend to create things to say, okay, this is how we're going to do our work, and then, you know, 6 months down the line and we're like, oh, we need money to do this. Then we go to someone and say, well, this is what I've got laid out. And they're like, well, great, but, you know, I don't have anything for you right now. So create a plan and then share it.
My favorite piece of advice related to that is, if you ask for money, you'll get advice. If you ask for advice, you'll get money.
Yep.
Once you have an operational plan, get advice from as many people as you can on it.
That's right.
Take the advice, but it's your opportunity to explain your thinking to them and get their perspective on whether that makes sense to them as a stakeholder in the organization.
Exactly, exactly. And talk to your colleagues. There might be an opportunity for you to connect into, I mean, if you're a party of one or an army of one, and you know, you're really trying to do this on your own, connect into other pieces of the organization that might be doing something that can connect into your plans, and maybe you can share budget or share resources so that you're not doing it alone. One of the things that we do as part of our annual conference is we do an Ask the Expert program, and we bring our experts from the community to our annual conference to do kind of face-to-face interaction. Now, we could not ever hold our own live event. We don't have the budget for that, but we do have an annual event that we can tag along on, and we don't have to pay for the event space. We don't have to pay for food and drink. You know, the only thing that we are responsible for is our little area of that event, where we might need some additional things like a monitor to do a slideshow or something like that. So, you know, no, we would not be in a position where our community would hold its own live event, but we can capitalize on the fact that there's value in the live events that we do hold, and we can bring community into those events to then show people how PMI and the association itself is a community, and here's how you connect into it, and here's what you'll get out of it by interacting in different ways. So, you know, don't just think that you have to do it alone. Find your connection points, use your internal community to really figure out how you can extend the life of your program and do the things that you want to do, even if you are, you know, a lone wolf in the community space within your organization.
That is great advice. And it's something that I love, because it's basically saying, use your community management skills, go connect, go engage.
Exactly. Exactly. Right?
It's nothing more than that. Like, I think some people get a little overwhelmed by, like, oh, I have to do all these things and there's a process and I don't know what they are. And at the heart, it's just talking to people. It's just doing what you do naturally in the community space, but doing it kind of intentionally, internally. So on that note, I think I'm going to wrap up. That was some great advice, Marjorie. And every time I talk to you, I love kind of hearing how you think about navigating this, because you've made a lot of progress by just taking a lot of small steps, and you've kept going, and that in the end, that value compounds over time, and you've been able to make a lot of progress. The days are long, but the years are short, as the parenting advice goes. So thank you for sharing a little bit of that expertise and perspective with us today.
Oh, thank you, Rachel. It's always a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Conversations with Community Managers from the Community Roundtable. We'll see you next time.